There we go. Yeah, Joe C. I ask a lot of people for advice, and sometimes I listen to Joe's. So thank you, Joe.
Wow. Do I give advice? Maybe I do. I really love the democracy of and the style of I'm always looking for new words. I don't like the word 12-step fellowships because it suggests that the steps themselves are some sort of that's an altar that we kneel at. And I've worked the steps and got lots of good things out of them. And if you've never tried them, dabble, right? Don't make a commitment to 12, try a couple, right? But it's more than that. And for some people, it's not that at all. For some people, they're not here for self-discovery. They're not here for, self-improvement. They're here to find sobriety. And whether they inadvertently stumble through some of the steps or not, for some people, the whole process is religious. I'm bad, I've got to be fixed kind of approach. And I love the rugged individuals who do it their own way. I think that'll help. And yeah, maybe I give advice, but I would like to think that at my best, I'm good at asking questions, and I'm unabashedly share my experience. No matter, there's nothing I'm ashamed of anymore in my life. There are things I'm discreet about for sure, but there's nothing I don't act, way outside of my value system anymore. And I think that's one of the cool things about recovery. I'm Joe, by the way, dipsomaniac, a person with substance use disorder, alcoholic. This identity is always a double-edged sword, right? There's something freeing about, oh, I'm not a bad person. I'm a sick person. I have alcohol use disorder or alcoholism. That's a real relief, that comes with that sort of identity. But when does it get to a point where it becomes limiting? Oh, that's, I'm such an addict. Oh, that's my alcoholic brain. Oh, my disease is out in the parking lot doing push-ups if I'm not vigilant. I'm all that and more. And when I was in addiction, I wasn't all that and more because I was a slave to my sort of the binge and purge of my addiction. And I'm still an addict. That's an interesting thing about it. When I got sober, I thought for sure by now you come to AA, they prick your finger, do a blood test, go, yep, you're a real alcoholic, or oh no, just try to cut down a little bit. And off we would go. We would know, but there is no scan or and then when the whole brain imaging thing came along, we thought we'd learn a lot about that. And then unlocking the DNA chain, we would be able to know which kids of ours are going to be addicts and which ones aren't. But that I don't think that's happened yet. And will it ever? Does it need to? Recovery, they talk about evidence-based, blah blah blah, right? Okay. And AA is evidence-based. Petting horses is evidence-based. They have studies that show that, equine therapy aids in people's recovery. I don't know. I've pet horses. I've never associated that with, working a program. Maybe that'd be good. I don't know. But I think it's more craft than science. I say that because it really is quite personal. It really is like learning to paint for the first time. Before I'm going to do the Mona Lisa, I need to know how to, you know, spread paint on a canvas. There's some basic skills I need to learn before I can start being creative with songwriting. I have to learn how to play the guitar before I can write a song on the guitar. With sobriety, there's some basics, some real fundamental things that you got to learn the rules and then forget the rules. That's what they teach you in art. And I think that is true in recovery. And when I say forget the rules, I'm not talking about going crazy. I'm just talking about, you know, they're just the structure. And I need in my recovery some order and some spontaneity, a little blend of both. I've talked about that before. It's sort of the yin and yang of recovery, because having one and not the other leads, it's like you're not in balance anymore. If I have spontaneity without any structure in my life, that will lead to chaos. And that chaos can eventually lead to complete nihilism. You know, I get the fuck it's. Fuck you, fuck me, fuck everything. What's the point? That's not a healthy place to be. Also, if I have structure with no spontaneity in my life, that's going to lead to rigidity for me. And that rigidity can lead to, you know, me being fascist in the way I see things. My way only. You have to change your way of thinking to my way of thinking. This can't work unless we do it this way. And that's not very fun. Certainly, it's not very funny. You know, like it just, I want to avoid that. And when I said, I don't know why we call this sort of a 12-step program. It's more a 12 tradition program, but nobody knows what the fuck they are, right? Like how many people could, you know, when questioned, what's tradition 8, right? You know, like, let me look it up. It's here somewhere. That's the one after 7, right? You know, and everyone knows 7, time to pay up. The author of the 12 steps, was recorded as saying that AA wasn't invented. And by that, maybe he means the steps. It was just ideas that were borrowed from philosophy, religion, science, medicine, and sort of gathered together for, you know, it was one person's view of this. Is how it worked, always meant as a suggestion, been adapted many times in many ways. I've seen 7-step versions that work just as good and 10-step versions and 16-step versions. One journey, many paths, one journey, I think it's a 16-step program, like more to it. And because, I mean, a lot of people in recovery for a long time feel that, you know, there's still hungry for growth, hungry for peace, improvement, whatever. They've done the step process maybe once, maybe twice, and they want some more. But I find the traditions, like a lot of people just don't want to talk about them because what has that got to do with me? You know, I'm here to have 3 topics, me, myself, I. Okay, can I go first? and that's good. We need to talk about ourselves. But the traditions, I think, have changed my life in great ways. I sometimes share some time with the Emotional Sobriety Podcasters. And they've done emotional sobriety in the steps every way they could. And I said, let's look at the traditions. I mean, like if you want emotional sobriety, you have to exercise those emotional sobriety muscles. So what better way to do it than go to a business meeting, get involved in a committee, you know, maybe become your group rep where you have to represent the needs of everybody, not just your own view or opinion. And then go to an area where all these other group reps are expressing their group's needs and opinions. And that can be boring, and that can be testing, and it will grow my emotional sobriety muscles. So anyway, they went ahead with it. Now, I don't know what we're going to talk about, but in May, anyway, it'll be tradition one anyway. And I think that's great, because I think something was created that was quite unique. And I'm not talking about taking the words literally, you know, whether anonymity is an outdated idea or not, I don't know. But humility isn't. Humility is not an outdated idea. Whether my own recovery is dependent on the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous, maybe that's an outdated idea. But my recovery, I think, is dependent on my connection. Being connected to fellow people in recovery is absolutely certain. If AA, the corporation, went bankrupt, this meeting would still meet tomorrow. My home group would still meet. AA is structured in a way, thanks to the traditions, that we're not dependent. I use the switch over to virtual AA. I mean, it was always being used. It was great for remote communities and sort of special purpose groups. And some techies have been on message boards. I learned about secular recovery from a Yahoo, you know, chat group, where it was a week-long meeting where people posted a topic and other people jumped in. And that's how I found out about it early this century. And but that transition couldn't have happened if AA was a top-down command and control center. We would all sit and wait for, are we going to do Zoom, or are we going to do, I can't even remember what the old one was called. Anyway, I still have it as an app on my desktop, and I never use it. It just doesn't exist to me anymore. It's really not an important issue. You can Google it if you want, but anyway, I'm off on a tangent. But all of our groups everywhere, the Great Britain survey sort of asked people, because it was done right in 2000 during the pandemic, you know, how are you switching over? Who's getting left behind? Who's benefiting that wasn't benefiting before? And of course, there was a spectrum, right? Some people prefer online. Some people find it wanting. Most people, it was just as good, you know, neither better nor worse. And that couldn't have happened, what happened, because most groups were online within a week or two. Some days. And if we had to wait for instructions from some central office and then an agreed upon format for what that meeting would be and protocols, and we still wouldn't have our first meeting. Like, there's no way we would agree on it. But all of the groups just did their own thing. They're completely autonomous, figuring it out as they go along, that sort of pioneering spirit. It's a great example of how our traditions work. And I'm reading a new book, and it's called One from Many, and it's written by a guy named D. Hawk. I've just sort of discovered him in the last 6 months. He was the founder of Visa Corporation and the CEO, and that isn't a stock company. It's a privately held company, or it certainly was when he was in charge. And he created what he calls a chaotic organization. Chaos uses the meaning and sound to different chaos and order. I prefer spontaneity and order, because chaos, I think, is a more severe version of it. But chaos and and order. I think he means the same thing. And so all of the different branches of Visa, they do their own thing, run their cells the way they need to. The only point of the core is the principles remain the same. And he's also not one of these CEOs that thinks he deserves to earn 220 times more than his frontline workers. He had a very liberal idea about how to run a company. And he did it for reasons that just because this top-down thing doesn't work. War doesn't work because armies don't work. The economy doesn't work because this sort of top-down thing doesn't work. The ecology is in the shits because of this sense of sort of command and control over the environment. And if you think his ideas are sort of libertarian gobbledygook, maybe they are, but I could give you some examples of how this perfect blend of chaos and order work. The universe would be one. That's a good example. Life, that's how that happens. So it's not an invention of something new. It's a return to something before the sort of willful approach. Just a couple of quotes from the book that I really enjoy. Control requires denial of life. Life is uncertainty, surprise, hate, wonder, speculation, love, joy, pity, pain, mystery, and a thousand other things we can imagine. So life isn't about control. It's not about getting. It's not about having or knowing. It's not even about being. Life is eternal, perpetual becoming, or it is nothing. That's sort of like Bill Wilson's line in the sand. Becoming is not a thing to be known, commanded, or controlled. It's a magnificent, mysterious odyssey to be experienced. I remember it was sort of an ACA experience, and someone challenged me, Adult Children of Alcoholics, "Joe, you're not a human being, you're a human doing." And it was quite accusational, like I was doing something wrong. But I took it to heart. I go, okay, let me think about that. I'm a human doing. Yeah, like I relate more to, you know, what I do than who I am. Who I am seems very abstract and nebulous, but I can measure what I do. I just, you know, like I like it better. And but maybe I needed to focus more on the other being. But I like this idea of becoming, because whatever I'm becoming, I might think I know because I plan to become such and such. But, you know, it's still undetermined. And if you're not being born, you're dying. If you're not like in, you know, I don't want to be, you know, done with my recovery. I don't want to be done with my life. I want it to sort of carry on. And these ideas that he writes about, they were the same ideas that sort of inspired the traditions. And they're not perfect either. Like the old system wasn't perfect. It's not perfect. But I really think we're onto something there. And it allows us to do things in a creative way. I will often be heard saying, I go to a lot of meetings. I've been to a lot of meetings in a lot of places. And I've never found one where everyone gets sober and everyone gets along with everybody else. And if I found that meeting, and I go to meetings that aren't like AA meetings, I go to all kinds of recovery meetings. And if I found that meeting where everybody finds recovery and everybody gets along, I would come to my home group. I would say, we should have a business meeting. And I would say, let's do what they do. Because if everybody's getting sober, isn't that what we want? Everyone's getting along. Isn't that what we need? We'll do that. But because that doesn't exist, you know, we're all pioneers. We're all sort of becoming. My group is becoming. It isn't stuck in the mud. It's sort of moving along. And that whole, like, we know this, one day at a time, one breath at a time, one moment at a time. I mean, that's that's where life is lived. And it this isn't throwing stones at making plans or having goals or, taking control of your life, you know. But am I taking control of my life? Am I controlling the outcome? I think a lot of that is, you know, sort of self-help marketing. But I have an influence. I certainly can. I can steer it a little bit, but I can't command the wind. I can just set the sails. And that this is what recovery is. Like, I'm not there yet. I am still becoming just as I was when I got here. And I was really, my hair was on fire. I was saying whatever I had to just to not draw any undue attention to myself. I was planning my escape. I was just uncomfortable all of the time. And tell me how to be not comfortable all the time. And they said, Joe, maybe learn to be uncomfortable. Maybe just a bit. Spend some time with just a moment of time being uncomfortable. And isn't that kind of the secret of life, instead of, you know, wanting, having what I want, wanting less? And I think it is. Like I still, you know, wake up with a things to do list, and I'm anxious and shit needs to get done. But more and more, you know, I do want less, and because I can only do one thing at a time anyway. I think that's better. So I never really got started with my talk here today, but I'm going to end it. I feel like Alan Watts, but I'm not drunk. Thanks, everybody.